Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to welcome back Bassam Shakashiri to the microphone. He is an emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, a national proponent for science and science education. And we're talking to him about science literacy today. And, you know, have we made any progress over the past couple of decades? Plus, we'll learn about a new report from the National Science Foundation. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Difficulty talking about science or understanding it? Or maybe you're a science teacher. What challenges have you faced lately? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. But Sam, welcome. I know you're retired, but I'm sure you haven't quit working, and you're probably working just as hard as you always have. What are you engaged in doing right now?
Are you talking about me? No, you must be talking about somebody else. What is this? That's a formality that we go through. Larry, it's a joy to be with you and a pleasure to be with you and your listening audience. I am committed to improving the connectivity between science and society. It is so crucial that all of us become literate in science, to develop a sense of appreciation of what science is and what it can do for society. We just heard the headlines.
Yeah.
The IPCC issued a report about the dire consequences if we don't act responsibly on global warming. There's so many topics that we have talked about in the past, and we shall continue to talk about them. So in retirement, I am continuing my thrust to help all of us, including myself, be active in responsible ways to address the grand challenges that we face in society.
Yeah, there's no shortage, that's for sure. And, you know, you've taught chemistry of many years, and you enjoyed I think you enjoy sharing the learning of science with audiences all over the world. What do you take away from those experiences?
It's a wonderful learning experience for me as well. I learn by sharing. I listen carefully to what people say. I watch their facial expressions. I interact with them electronically and for a long, long time in person, but not for the past 2 years, but this is about to change. I look forward to that. It's so rewarding and so informative to me to be engaged in these science education activities aimed at raising the level of science literacy, not only in Madison, not only in Wisconsin, not only in the United States, but around the world, because the globe, our precious globe, faces great challenges. Some of them are caused by human activity, and we should try to immediately make the necessary adjustments and take the proper steps to stop that. So it is rewarding. It's also encouraging. And you can hear it in my voice. I'm enthused and excited about visiting with people in our listening audience here today to help address the critical issues that face us as citizens of the planet, as citizens of Wisconsin, as citizens in neighboring states to Wisconsin.
You know, there is so much to talk about. Actually, Courtney wondered if you had a favorite chemical, or could you just pick one? Or could you pick just one?
One chemical? Boy, you know how many there are. Thousands and hundreds of thousands of chemicals. But let me say one chemical that we all deal with on a daily basis is a favorite of mine. It's water.
Mm-hmm.
Water covers about 70% of the Earth's surface. It makes about the same percentage of our weight or mass here. and it is essential for life. It's the only substance that exists in nature on Earth in all three physical states of matter, a gas, liquid, and solid. And it's always moving between all these three phases all the time. So, you know, whether it's water in the lake or water in the frozen lakes that we have now, or water in the atmosphere, water is a very important substance to talk about and to learn about. And Larry, may I invite your listeners to visit my website, scifun.org, scifun.org, where I have entries related to items we can learn about, including water. And it's actually featured right now on the homepage of my website, scifun.org. And I ask people in the listening audience to not only to take a look at this, but to share it with other people, share it with teachers, share it with members of the community. It's so crucial that we all participate in learning about water. And you know, Larry, there are parts of our state in Wisconsin, also in neighboring states, where people are unable to drink safely water.
Yeah.
So it's a great concern to all of us. And it is part of our responsibility to address these challenges and these issues so that we can really enjoy a good quality of life.
Jim in La Crosse has a question or comment that relates to what you were just talking about, I believe. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I'm sure the professor knows that the Natural Resources Board met last week, and they turned down the recommendation to have a state limit on PFAS in drinking water. I guess one of the members of the Natural Resources Board said that he didn't believe the DNR scientists. And I just cannot believe that members of this board would not listen to the Department of Natural Resources scientists and Department of Health scientists. And how can we reach these board members and change their mind?
Yeah.
That's a very good observation, Jim. Thank you for bringing this up. We have to engage in conversations with others in our community to make sure that we understand not only the facts, but what we should do as a result of knowing what the facts are. And it is part of our mission in life to be responsible community citizens. And so whether it is conversations with elected officials or appointed officials, the sense of the community has to be expressed properly. We all aim to do things for the common good. And if we all believe that, and if we all live that way, then we can successfully engage in respectful conversations, respecting each other as fellow human beings. I'm not saying we necessarily respect somebody's views or opinions. I'm saying we respect each other and we engage in meaningful conversations that address the facts, but we go beyond the facts to deal with the emotional and personal issues that any person or any group of people have when it comes to understanding what it is that we mean by having a good quality of life in Wisconsin. You talk about DNR in Wisconsin, but this is applicable to every other place.
And, you know, the one thing you didn't mention, but, you know, sometimes politics has the way of getting involved in science, and we've seen a lot of politics involved in all kinds of science issues over the last few years, and last couple of years in particular. And I'm wondering, how does the scientist get beyond the politics of whatever topic is being discussed? As PFAS, Jim brought the perfect example here. or a very good example at least. How do we get around that?
Well, Larry, I don't think we need to go beyond the politics. I think we should engage in meaningful political discourse based on what is known and what is being suggested and what's being considered. This is part of how the democratic institutions that we deeply believe in function. So science is a human endeavor. It's done by people who are engaged in exploring and asking questions, coming up with answers. But all of that should be shared with the general public so that matters that relate to water quality or any of the finite resources that we have should be addressed properly and you know, one-on-one and also in community conversations. This is one of the grand challenges that we face. The question is, how can we help sustain the quality of life on Earth and its people in the face of global warming, in the face of having finite resources? We can take responsible action if we engage in meaningful, respectful conversations. And I'm saying to you, politics is an important part of our daily lives. And I use the word politics I use it in the best sense of the word, so that we can fully participate in the democratic institutions that we belong to and we want to strengthen.
Jim, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too with your questions or comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSusa, we'll get to you in just a second here, Bassam. I want to remind everybody that Trina LaSusa is our engineer today and Courtney Everts, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network, taking a look at science literacy, looking at global warming, a lot of things with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri. Bassam, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, of course. And if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. But Sam, I know you wanted to add something to our last comment here.
If I may, to say a few more words about science literacy. What is science literacy? Science literacy does not require a detailed knowledge of any scientific field. It's rather a broad appreciation and understanding of what science is capable of achieving, and equally important, of what science cannot accomplish. Science is not the answer to all the human issues that we face, but it is a critical part of addressing big challenges that we have. So, you know, I strongly believe that science literacy is necessary for the democratic process to work. And science literacy is, as I said, is a broad appreciation and understanding of science and what science is capable of achieving and cannot also achieve. So here's my strongest statement about science literacy, and I choose my words carefully here. Science literacy enlightens and enables people to make informed choices. This is what we're talking about with the question with Jim. Also to be skeptical. You know, in science, we make advances by being skeptical. But also, and this is very important, to reject shams, quackery, unproven conjecture, and most importantly, to avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions when matters of science and technology are concerned. This is all related to what Jim has asked about, and with all of us who care about the quality of life in our communities, is to avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions where matters of science and technology are concerned. I just wanted to share that with you because I feel very strongly about this, and I know many people in our listening audience agree with this, and I urge them to converse with others and to try to improve the quality of discourse that we have. Let's avoid name calling. Let's avoid pointing the finger. Let's try to help point the way, because the challenges that we face are not only daunting, but requires our best, and that's what I advocate for.
Let's take another call. Vern from Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Vern. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree with the professor. Okay. Water is a vapor. Only a chemical element can be a gas. So I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, all right.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, Vern?
He said water is a vapor. It can't be a gas.
Well, that's the same reference. It's water vapor is in the gaseous phase. It's not liquid. It's not condensed, and it's not solid. So the three physical states of matter are gaseous, liquid, and solid. And so water vapor is a gas. It's an invisible gas. You don't see it. But when it condenses and forms clouds, and the clouds interact with light, the liquid droplets in the cloud interact with light, they become visible as clouds. Does that help, Vern?
Yeah, I think we lost Vern there. Thanks, Vern, for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, before we go back to the phones, I mean, do you think we've made any progress as a society when it comes to science literacy? I mean, I just sometimes, you know, if the science clearly shows something, there are still people who are going to say, well, no, that's just not right. I don't believe it.
Yes, that is definitely the case. And yes, we've made very good progress. Have we made sufficient progress? Not yet. Once we make better progress, then the conversations that we have about issues that face us, whether they're political conversations or any other type of conversations, would be done in a different tone. So we've made some progress, but we also have to be aware that the issues, the challenges that we face now require much bigger efforts on our part to visit with each other, to converse with each other, but also to convince our elected officials and appointed officials to act in ways that help us preserve the environment. So raising awareness is happening. What's not happening as much yet is the proper action to be taken. And that's what the IPCC report that we just heard about in the news, you know, before we came on the air, Larry, is all about. It requires action, responsible action now. And we have to understand why we're doing it, and we have to understand how we go about it. There's so many issues that we face. How shall I say this? The cumulative scientific evidence is really unequivocal. Global warming is a threat to all humans and to the planet, and it's unequivocal. And if someone wants to discuss the details of the science and the details of the basis upon which I and so many other people say this, I'm happy to do that. But we should also look at the recommendations that are being made by political leaders, and we should try to influence regulations, and we should try to affect the our own behavior and the behavior of others in our community, so we have a good chance of mitigating global warming. I can't say enough good things about what Dane County is doing, or the city of Madison is, or many other cities in Wisconsin. I can't say enough about how good that is, but we have to sustain it. We have to have the younger people learn about it. We have to have the parents of the younger people continue to act in responsible ways. This is not an easy thing to do, Larry, but we have to do it.
Mike in Sauk City will give you a chance. Mike, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to sort of bring up what the professor said about science being used to prevent people from being bamboozled. And I think one of the areas where we've been really bamboozled is the notion that we can have an infinitely growing population and economy on a finite planet. This year is the 50th anniversary of the publication of a landmark study called The Limits to Growth. And that study looked at different scenarios of a growing population and a growing economy, and virtually every one of them resulted in societal collapse. And now we have studies that are looked at data going back 30 years, 40 years, and almost 50 years, and what they show is that those predictions from the Limits to Growth clearly reflect what they call the standard business as usual model. So we've learned almost nothing from what's going on. And climate change is just one of the symptoms that we're experiencing from running into the limits to growth. Others are the loss of biodiversity, the depletion of natural resources, and so on. And I'd just like to hear the professor's comments about whether or not he thinks we can have an ever-growing economy and population on a finite planet. And this would
Thank
be a good
you,
topic
Mike.
For a future show.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mike, for bringing up these points here. They're very, very relevant to what we're discussing. Yes, we need to be responsible in our economic behavior. We need to be – the economy is very important. Science and technology are the engines that drive our economy, so we have to be sure that we understand what it is that's being done so that we have good jobs. We have good recreational facilities. So we have good schools and so on. The list goes on. You're right, Mike. The grand challenges that we face include population growth, finite resources, spreading disease. Do I need to say more about that now? I'm happy to say more if people want to hear more. Global warming, you know, we should focus on what not only we can do, what we must do. And we should do it in ways that are respectful of each other as inhabitants of this planet, as citizens in our communities. This the discourse that is happening in society these days leaves much to be desired, Larry, and Mike, and everyone that's listening. I just think that it's so crucial that we have some civility in the discourse that we engage in. Lots of civility, not just some civility. And that's what's missing. And that will make our politics better. It will make our economic decisions be sound and be serving purposes that are for the common good of society.
Mike, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it very much. Let's give Randall in Wilson a chance to join in. Randall, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, awesome. I just kind of discovered you today, and I find the show very intriguing, very, very cool. And I just wanted to throw my idea in on the your guest, obviously, what he's a scientist.
Yes.
Okay. Really cool guy. My throw on the whole global warming is okay, what happened so many million years ago with dinosaurs, and they were running roughshod all over the planet. And so was that global warming, and all of a sudden Antarctica and the Arctic, and they're finding dinosaur bones there, and they could only live in tropical kind of climates. And so I really don't believe that we as people, like running on ants as a mountain, are, you know, disrupting or destroying the planet. I think we're part of it. And I think everything else, like asteroids hitting the Earth, or, you know, that's part of nature. So I get a little, questioning about, you know, how science got melted in with politics. And I see that as dangerous to our, you know, to all of us living on the planet. I really do. You don't mix science with politics. Science is science. Politics are basically bad people, you know, trying to make a name for themselves. But anyway, that is my comment, and I would, you know, wonder.
Want to hear what Sam has to say about it? Okay, for sure.
Thank you, Randall, for your comments, all of them. I appreciate the earlier ones that you made very much. They're very touching. And I would like to make some observations about what you said near the end. There are for sure natural causes for global warming. There's no question about that. But there are no questions whatsoever that human activity has contributed greatly to accelerating global warming. The evidence is unequivocal. There's no doubt about that. We have telltales here in Wisconsin. If you look at the plant hardiness zones, by the way, I have this on my website, sizefund.org, SCIFUN.org, the plant hardiness zones, if you look at those over a 20-year period, you can see that these zones are getting warmer. It won't be too long before the temperature in Wisconsin that affects farmers and planting will be higher than it has been. That's what the telltale is. Here's another telltale. And we use this as a very strong piece of information to help us appreciate the connection of science to society. The duration of ice on the surface of Lake Mendota or any other lake is getting shorter and shorter. That's because we are, as human beings, relying so heavily on fossil fuels and burning these fuels for a variety of reasons. But we're putting more carbon dioxide into the air, and we're increasing the effect of greenhouse gases. These are undisputable facts. We can discuss them. We can review them. That's what I urge that we do. Is just don't take my word for it. Just engage in a meaningful, respectful conversation. And Randall, that's what politics is: meaningful, respectful conversations. That's what I urge that we all do, because we must work collectively as well as individually for the common good of society.
Randall, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give some others a chance to join in as well. Harold in northern Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Hi, Harold.
Well, thank you. Regarding your guest, I had no concept of who he was until that voice spoke a little bit more, and I just want to thank him for the fantastic December and Christmas shows maybe 40 years ago that my kids could not wait for each year. So thank you for that. It was and is a joy.
Thank you so much, Harold. Thank you. I appreciate that, and it was a real joy for me to be involved in so many of these public engagement activities. And by the way, all of these videos of my programs can be accessed through my website. If you go to scifund.org, S-C-I-F-U-N.org, and we have a YouTube channel. You click there, and you can watch them for as long or as short as you wish. Thank you so much, Harold. Thank you.
Thanks, Harold. Appreciate it. Well, Jim in Madison, what's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm just wondering where the topic is science literacy. More and more when people are talking about greenhouse gases, they say carbon when they mean carbon dioxide. To what extent is it significant that people are getting impression as if carbon itself is a harmful element when they really mean carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas?
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for making this correct observation. Yes, when they say carbon, they mean carbon dioxide. It's just like we say bananas have potassium in them. They don't have the element potassium. They have the element potassium in combination with other elements. So, it's the way that we speak and we in the vernacular. So you're correct. When they say carbon, they mean carbon dioxide. They don't mean carbon monoxide. They don't mean carbon in sugar and carbohydrates. They mean, in this reference, they mean carbon as carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is a major greenhouse gas. But by the way, Jim, are you still on?
Jim, are you still there?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes, I'm here.
So, Jim, this is a friendly part of the conversation. Do you happen to know which gas is the largest greenhouse gas in terms of its presence on our planet? Is it carbon dioxide? We said is a greenhouse gas. Do you know which one is the largest one?
As a greenhouse gas?
Is it
methane?
No, methane is a greenhouse gas. The one that we've been mentioning all along, that when water vapor is a greenhouse gas, and we can't do anything about it because we can't affect the water cycle. We can't affect the movement of water from one physical state of matter to another. But what global warming is causing, because we have more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, what global warming is causing is that the temperature of the oceans is getting higher, and therefore more water vapor goes into the atmosphere, and so this is a very complicated and complex matter, but it is fairly well understood by people who care to go into it. And I just took advantage of your question, Jim, not to put you on the spot or anything, just to share with everyone that water vapor is a major greenhouse gas.
Interesting. Jim, thank you so much. Let's go to Aaron in Marquette, Michigan next. Aaron, hi.
Hi. I didn't hear any other women calling in, so I figured I'd call in.
Good.
And I remember watching your show as a kid, too. That was fun. But I have a question about scientific writing and publications. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on which way would be the better way to write, since I'm hoping to get some publications out at some point once I get a little bit further, once I graduate from my bachelor's degree. And is it better to write just plain and simple, or should we follow the famous Dr. Prod in the geologist community that praises the dense scientific writing that always comes to mind?
To some extent, it depends on the audience you're trying to reach. But
yes.
Sam, go ahead.
Yes, Aaron, thank you for asking this question and making this observation. There's scientific writing for fellow scientists. That's one thing. But I think what you're talking about is scientific writing for the general public to understand and to appreciate. And that's where we have to avoid jargon. Scientists have to avoid using jargon that we commonly use when we speak with each other about scientific matters. We have to use language, part of the language that is understood and appreciated. And I can't help but say, Larry, that one of the programs that we have here at UW-Madison is to encourage every PhD graduate student to include a chapter in their PhD thesis explaining their highly specialized research to a non-science audience. So to communicate and to write something scientific, of course, but to share it with family members, with community members, with elected officials. And if you go to my website, again, I keep mentioning this, scifund.org, you'll see that. It's on the homepage. So, Aaron, thank you so much for giving me this opening to mention this.
Yeah. Aaron, thank you so much. By the way, Judy from Fitchburg emailed and wanted to add to the, going back to the caller's question about PFAS and political boards and courts' opposition to addressing it. We talked about, she felt it didn't quite go far enough. She said, yeah, legislators talk, yeah, we should talk with legislators about science and the necessary policy changes with something like PFAS in our water. But if her suggestion was, if there isn't a local PFAS group in the caller's area, he or she should join one of the statewide organizations that have actually even filed lawsuits, or start your own science-based organization. What do you think of that?
Yes, I think that's a very good idea. I urge people to learn more about Citizens Climate Lobby, CCL, and not only learn about it, but join it as you choose it in part of what you do regarding global warming. The Union of Concerned Scientists, if you can search for that on the web. Yes, join locally. Local conversations are crucial. And everything that we've talked about, Larry, here are related to our responsibilities as citizens in the community that we belong to.
And once more, a listener said, what was your website again? So give us that website.
It's scifun.org, scifun.org. If you Google or whatever search engine you use, if you Google science is fun, you'll find it.
Always a pleasure, Bassam. Thank you so much, and it was a great conversation. We'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, everyone.
Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. Well, we're going to kind of keep our conversation about science going, because we're going to be talking about weather and climate as well with our two guests. Guess what? It's the last Monday of the month, and that means the weather guys are here. Steve Ackerman and John Martin next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.